Podtacular, episode 313, Media Explosion, for September 25th, 2012. Hello everyone, welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dustorm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are without a third tonight. Brent is here with me, alone.
I ate the third.
You ate the third?
Yes, they were here and I ate them.
Oh, that... I don't want to know how you did that exactly, but moving on. Daft is not here. He sometimes doesn't get off until late from work. So I think he's actually still at work right now when we're recording this. And Greg was thinking about getting on, but apparently he is having to fix his girlfriend's car. So I guess he's out doing that right now. But Greg is looking to try to at least make some appearance on the show. So for those who miss Greg dearly, he will be making some appearances pretty shortly. So you have that to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it.
But other than that to look forward to, we have a ton of info that got dropped this weekend. Pretty much it was just floodgates of Halo information, because I hadn't even read all the interviews, watched all the videos that have been put out over this weekend. And there's so much stuff, I don't know if I'll be able to watch every single piece of information that came out. So let's just go through the general stuff that what we got here. So we got new videos for just about everything. We got it for campaign, Spartan Ops, and War Games. Let's talk about War Games, because I think everyone is really looking forward to the War Games aspect of things.
Yes, everybody loves multiplayer.
Indeed. So the first thing we want to talk about is the new game mode Dominion. And this was shown off on Longbow, right? It's called Longbow. Yeah.
Longbow.
So it was one of the maps that was playable at E3, and it was not at PAX, so unfortunately I have not been able to play it yet, but it looks kind of like one of those balance between maybe a 6v6 team where it can have heavy vehicles, but it's not really much open space for them to be used. What's your impressions of Longbow?
The map, the game type?
We'll get to the game type in a minute.
Yeah, it looks nice. Kind of reminds me of that map that I never played in Halo Reach that came out later. It was like set inside the area where Halsey was like hanging out.
Oh, Breakpoint.
Yes. Kind of reminded me of that.
I guess it kind of does.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm saying this, but just kind of the environment of Snowbound. I know it's definitely a lot bigger than Snowbound, but having the two bases kind of around that rock fissure.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me kind of like a bigger version of that in a just way, but a lot more vehicle friendly. So from the gameplay that we saw of Dominion as well, it seems like there's actually more on the back sides of the map that's a lot more open that you really don't get up close. Just looking at general gameplay, because it's usually around the two bases and then that middle base area. But there's a few clips in that kind of showed some of the more undiscovered areas, I think, in the map. So it actually looks like it may be bigger than some of us actually think it is.
It looks pretty large. But in Dominion, you're just going to be staying around the bases, kind of.
Yeah, so
we'll get into that when we start talking about the game type itself. But
yeah. But Longbow, and all in all, it feels like a 6v6 map to me.
Yeah. But, I mean, you could totally do 8v8 on it. Pick team it.
I guess we'll have to wait and find out. Until we can finally get our hands on it.
I don't think it'd be an issue.
Yeah, probably not. So, Dominion. This is an interesting take on territories. For the most part, what you have to do is you have to capture bases, and you have pretty much three different phases of capturing a base. So the first one, you're initializing the capture, which takes 10 seconds, and then you're actually capturing the base, which takes 30 seconds, and then you fortify the base, which takes another 30. So what happens is you have to go into each base, and there's a trigger that you have to activate that will start the initialization of the base capture. And at any point during that, an enemy can come in and halt the capture for yours and take over the capture, and it can start capturing it for them. And from the limited gameplay that we got as well, during the capture phase, they can also halt the capture and then capture it for themselves. So it seems like the timing of the phases themselves aren't dependent on the team, where I think classic territories, it doesn't... does it just keep on going, or does it actually go backwards and then... I think for classic territories, it counts backwards of what the other team's capture time was, and then it recounts up. So it takes that out of it. It just goes from how much time that was currently captured, but then it takes it over for your team if you go in and start the base capture for yourself. The big thing is the fortification, which after that you get shields put up on your base and you get turrets deployed along the base so you can get on and defend that base. And then when you have it finally fortified, you also get weapon and vehicle drops that you can go in and pick up. The nice thing about the vehicle drops is that only the team that has the base captured can pick up those vehicles. So you'll see, if you've watched the gameplay, it's focusing on Red Team. And for Red Team's base, which is their starting base is Charlie, there's a Wraith in the back, there's a Ghost inside, and there's actually red holograms of what vehicle is there. And until you want to get into that vehicle, it remains a hologram that only Red Team can access. So it's really interesting to see how they're making it to where you have the base, it's your stuff that you can get. Now, I'm not sure about the weapons. I don't know if those are just like regular ordnance drops that anyone can pick up. But if you own the base, you're the only ones that can get in those vehicles.
And I assume on the turrets, because...
I don't know.
I can't say that. I mean, it seems like you might be able to get on the turrets.
I mean, what if a guy jetpack? So the turrets are basically on top of the base. So yeah. And we didn't get enough gameplay to really determine all the aspects of what gets deployed in the base for each team. Can the other team go in? How easy is it for the other team to go into the base and capture a base that's been fortified and all that stuff? But as far as the turrets on top, I think if someone jetpacks up there, they can get on a turret. Because they're just sitting there. They are restricted on team, but...
Well, even with the vehicles, I mean, only your team can call in a vehicle on your base, but I assume that once the vehicle's out, you can hijack it and...
I'm assuming that's probably true.
So...
I think that's an interesting change, though, is making it to where you can only get into a vehicle if it's for your team.
Yeah.
And I think how they're doing it with a little hologram... And then you basically enter the vehicle, and then the vehicle just spawns there. That I think that's really cool.
And just, like, phases in out of nowhere. You're like, yes!
Mm-hmm.
Then drive out and start using it.
Right.
I'm assuming you're rewarded for keeping your bases and kind of staying around, trying to defend them.
Exactly. So the purpose of the game is to capture all the bases. And when you do... It goes into this last stand mode where the other team is given overshields and they have one life to take another base. So if they can manage to take back a base, then their whole team, I guess, respawns and it keeps on going till either the time limit is reached or there may be a score cap as well. I think in the gameplay that we were watching, the score cap may be 400 or 500 going off of a 10-point score per kill. So that's just a best guess, though. The gameplay that we saw had one last stand and then blue team got eliminated. So
even with the score cap, it's fairly high and you're going to be incentivized to try and gain all three bases and just beat the other team in last stand. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I think this kind of also hints at too, as well as how they've redesigned CTF, is they're really focusing on team games being a team game and not just a Slayer game with an objective. There's a lot of people that gripe about when people go into playlists and do oddball and capture the flag, that people go in there to slay and take advantage of the objective. And there's people with the credit system that they go in there and they get rewarded for getting outrageous kills, but they never score the objective. So what 343 is doing with how they've reinvented CTF and pretty much what they're doing in this Dominion game mode is really reinforcing the team aspect of game types that require playing the objective.
Yeah, if you don't go after the objective in Dominion, you're kind of screwed from the beginning.
Right.
Because as soon as the other team gets, you know, all three bases, you're in last stand, and, you know, it's...
Exactly. So it's important to try to maintain your bases and try to capture all the bases at the same time. And I have a feeling if teams are evenly matched, it's going to turn out to be a really interesting game mode where you're probably going to see people holding their own bases, but then having a real struggle for that middle one until someone can get a good flank on them. Not to pull out the Call of Duty reference, but it's almost like domination from Call of Duty, where you have the capture points that you hold, and it actually scores based on time that you're holding each point. But the gameplay style is still the same, where you have to go around, you have to hold points or a base in order to get reinforcements and really have an upper hand on against the other team.
Yeah, I assume if you have two bases and the other team only has one, you're going to have a distinct advantage. Just
right, because you're getting double the reinforcements.
Well, yeah, you're even getting like tanks and stuff. Like the Wraith is a reinforcement that you can call in if you own that base. So, I mean, that's a...
Well, from what I saw, they weren't really call-ins. They're just like, there's a Wraith spawn pad and there's a Ghost spawn pad. And if...
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, but you have to go over there and you have to actually, you know, hit the button, like hit X to call in Wraith or whatever. And
it's just like hit X to get in Wraith.
Yeah.
It's like the Wraith is there.
You can't like call it in like a drop. It's, you know.
Right. But... Yeah. So it's from what the text was, it's basically press X to enter vehicle. So. Yeah. I don't know, drop to me just sounds a little weird.
Yeah.
But so Dominion is definitely, I think it's basically the territories replacement. I don't know if there's going to be territories in Halo 4. There may be, and this might be just another new game mode that they're adding in there. But for the most part, I'm looking forward to playing this game mode. What about you, Brent?
Yeah, it looks cool. The only problem is that I thought Invasion looked cool before Halo Reach. And I know, obviously, Invasion's different, but kind of seems similar to me a little bit, maybe. And
Invasion Slayer, yeah.
Yeah.
Where you have the capture points where you go and you hold it for a certain amount of time, and then you get reinforced. I guess it kind of seems like it.
So, I'm going to have to play it to know.
Yeah. Another thing...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Looking back, I've always enjoyed, you know, CTF in big team battle. Because if you're on a team that values teamwork over just running around and killing people, you have a distinct advantage in that game type too. I mean,
right.
You can score three flag caps pretty fast if the other team has no clue what they're doing and they're not defending their flag and they're not going after your flag, and, you know, because then you can just stage a full-on offensive and you don't have to have any defense, and you just go over there with a Warthog and drop him off in the back on Blood Gulch and pick him up in the front.
Yep, exactly.
And run it back home.
Exactly.
This game type seems a little more hectic. I haven't played it yet, so obviously I don't know, but I'm worried that it might be, like, too hectic to where, unless you're on a team that just really knows what they're doing and has it together, if you're just with randoms, which I hope I'm not, you know. When Halo 4 comes out, I'm probably going to have a team of decent people from the Podtacular community who know what they're doing.
Exactly. Well, I think one of the things that they've really done to kind of help mitigate being overpowered is looking at the gameplay video, the bases are pretty big. So once you get in a base and once you start capturing a base, it's going to take some time for people to react to that and try to get there. And by the time they get there, that 10 seconds is going to be nearly up. And yeah. stopping that 10-second capture initiation is going to take people either being close to it or people blasting the heck out of it with a Wraith or something. And I think those shields for the base are just the like the shields for weapons and stuff, like the just the two-way shields that you would see in Reach or Halo 3.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. Well, I don't think it prevents you other teammates from going into a base, because if you can get that close to a base, then yeah, you should be able to get in without a problem.
I saw in one of the gameplay videos where when a occupier was trying to take over an enemy base, it kind of locked them in, like they couldn't get out through the shield doors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you actually have to stand there and defend your position until you capture the base.
All right. Maybe that's... So. Okay, that's interesting. So, basically, the team who owns the base would be able to go in and out, but for someone that goes into the base, once you're in there, you can't get out unless you take the base.
Right. If you're trying to capture it from an enemy, you have to wait it out and...
Interesting.
Now, I don't know if that works that way during, like, a neutral cap. Like, at the very beginning of the match, if you're trying to capture the base... If it'll just...
Probably not, because the bases don't belong to anyone at the beginning of the match.
Yeah.
So I would guess for that, probably not. But I didn't catch that, or I wasn't looking closely at the gameplays that I saw for that. So, interesting catch. We'll have to see if 343 releases more videos, if that actually is the case.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this week for the bulletin is going to basically be a Q&A of all the information that got dropped. That would be my guess. We'll have to see. It should be coming out tomorrow as when we're recording this. Today when you're probably actually listening to this, or yesterday. Another couple things from the Dominion gameplay videos, and this is... I saw this one specifically in the IGN one where they interviewed Josh Holmes. I don't know if this is any of the other ones, but we now have death cams and final kill cams for... specified game modes, and Dominion is one of those. So you have the option that when you die, I think after a second or two, it goes into your death cam, similar to how Call of Duty does it, so you can see how you died. And then it also has the final kill cam as well. So I'm wondering if that's you're going to be able to enable that for custom games, because having that in kind of a tourney style, like a tournament style gameplay, that may be interesting to possibly see it used in for cases like that, or for people that may just want to use it that way.
I don't know. Competitively, it seems like you would want to turn the death cam off, maybe.
Well, in certain situations. Like MLG, yeah, you definitely want it off for MLG. But for other... For other things, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother me. It's cool enough. It's kind of an industry standard at this point, you know,
yeah.
ever since Call of Duty started that crazy trend. I'm sure, I mean, there were death camps before Call of Duty, but Modern Warfare kind of made them real popular, especially the final death cam, because that's like the, oh, check this out moment, you know.
Right. I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea either. It's... And Josh Holmes basically explained it as kind of a learning tool for people that are newer to Halo. It's like, okay, how did this person come and kill me? Where did I die from? Where the hell did that nade come from? Stuff like that. So I think for these kind of game types, too, is especially for films, because it's like you get killed in some random way in... matchmaking or something, and it's like, well, how did I get killed? And having that death cam be like, oh, that's how I got killed. That was pretty cool. If you actually were able to see that, then there's a little more incentive to go into theater and possibly save that film. Where for some things, it's like, well, how did I get killed? I'll go look at it later, and then you just keep on playing. It's like, oh, well, that save film is no longer available because I've played 50 games since then. But I do like that kind of addition to the game.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really detracting from anything either.
No. I mean, seeing what the other guy killed you with or how he killed you really isn't going to give you much of an advantage. If anything, you might see where some enemy positions are, maybe, that you didn't see while you were playing. But by the time you respawn, I mean, you're probably going to... They're not even going to be there anymore. They're going to be somewhere else.
Right. I'm assuming that this is only going to be for game modes that have a definitive respawn timer. I could be wrong. Well, Call of Duty has the instant spawn, so I guess they could do it for other things. But I'm wondering what other game modes is going to have this enabled as well. That's what I'm most curious about. I like that the feature is there. I'm just curious for what other game modes it's going to be available for. And if it's... And if you can actually enable it in custom games.
Is it going to be in Griffball? That's the question everybody's asking.
I don't think so, because Griffball is so enclosed. You can, I mean, from your dead body, you can see where everyone is, and you're either being smashed by a hammer or slashed with a sword.
Or being smashed in the face with the ball carrier.
That too.
Punching through you.
That too. But for the most part, I don't think we'll even need it. Yeah.
No. I don't like how in Griffball you don't get that cool explosion at the end anymore. That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I kind of understand why, because if you had the explosion, you know, you'd kill off the entire team and then they'd have to respawn or whatever. And now Griffball is it's a constant thing. It's not like you score and then you have to wait for the game to reset.
Right.
So, I mean, I understand why they're doing that. It's just... For Griffball, that always seemed like the best part for me.
Oh, like, yeah, because it's like you score it and everyone blows up.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
what's like
I know what you mean. It would be interesting to have it where the bomb does blow up and you respawn, the ball you just basically, once the ball is scored, you respawn. Like, it doesn't start a new round, but you just respawn.
Yeah. Or you just have, like, the explosion effect with no damage attached to it. It wouldn't be as cool, but...
But
at least
I think the satisfying part is the fact that you're blowing people up that are near the bomb.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Was there anything else in Dominion that you could think of?
I'm trying to think.
I mean, there's the fortification, there's turrets, there's vehicles, there's the death cam.
I didn't see a lot of defensive strategy going on in Dominion, just from the videos I've seen, and obviously once people start playing it and get the hang of what's going on, defense is probably going to play a bigger role. But it seems to me like if you're going to have all these emplacements and incentives to defend a base after you've taken it, defense needs to be a part of that game type. For me, a fun objective game type needs to be almost equal parts offense and defense if you're playing against a decent opponent, you know. In CTF, if you have no defense, then obviously the other team can just run in and take your flag and just keep scoring on you. In the game types that weren't even, you know, the symmetrical play, I'm trying to think of other game types. That kind of worked on that.
I mean, even like territories is pretty much the closest thing that I can think of that we've had in previous Halo games.
Yeah.
The Invasion Slayer, I think, is also a good one to compare it to, but there's not really anything else that I can think of that we've had in the past with Halo.
Defense kind of, I enjoy that aspect of Halo, is what I'm getting at. And I want to see more defensive play on Dominion. I want to see people getting up on those turret emplacements and, you know, mowing down other vehicles and things like that.
Yeah.
Because in those videos, it just kind of seemed like they were running around almost exclusively trying to capture bases.
Yeah.
Very little coordination as far as...
Well, so the gameplay, at least from what I saw, was people were just on playing, and they were playing for the first time, so it was pretty much just a mess of media people playing dysfunctionally. I think once you get a good team in there, then you're going to see some good gameplay of people trying to hold their bases and taking over bases, and you'll see kind of this rotation of, at the same time, a team is trying to advance and capture a base, the other team has snuck around and is capturing one of their bases.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if there's going to be any cool variations on the Dominion game type. Like, what could you do to that game type? Say, like, a custom game type, you know, modify some settings. I'm having a failure of the imagination right now. I can't really think of anything amazing, but it seems like there's some cool things you could do, especially with the areas of effect that they have in Forge now.
Yeah. I just don't see... I mean, another question with that is, are you going to be able to forge a game type for Dominion?
I kind of hope so. I can't say whether or not for sure, but...
Because having those bases, unless you could... I'm assuming all the maps... Well, actually, for Halo 4, I'm not so sure. Because all the maps from the previous Halo games supported every game type. So...
Except for Invasion. That's what also reminded me about Invasion.
So I think we're going to see a lot more specialized maps in Halo 4, where certain maps, like all the maps, will probably be playable for Slayer. I mean, that's a given, where it's like,
it's
Slayer
universal.
And Capture the Flag, I think, are the two core game types that are going to be playable on every map. But for Dominion, there's probably going to be very few maps that you can actually do that for. Exile may be one of those, because you definitely have the two bases, and you may be able to do something in that middle area, up in that middle catwalk. So
it'll be interesting. I've noticed too that Invasion kind of suffered from a lack of popularity due to the fact that you only had three maps or two? I don't even remember. It was
You had Spire. You had Boneyard.
Boneyard.
Breakpoint.
Yeah, Breakpoint was one.
And then they finally introduced, because it was a forgeable game type. So they actually, there are some Forge World Invasion maps as well that people have made. And it's up on the Invasion Hopper. So it was forgeable. I don't think it was necessarily forgeable in maps like Zealot or Sword Base. Because those are just way too small.
It would kind of depend on whether or not those bases are like a forgeable object.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like the Dominion bases. I'm not sure. I really couldn't tell you.
Alrighty.
But actually bringing that up
where Invasion was only available on limited maps, it may be the Invasion replacement. Maybe it's not just Territories, but maybe it's Invasion as well.
Yeah. So is Territories definitely not in this game?
We don't know if Territories is not, and we don't know if Invasion is not. I think there's a lot more going for keeping Territories in the game and not Invasion.
Oh yeah, but Invasion was kind of that was Reach's thing, and it didn't prove to work quite as well as they thought it would. So I don't expect Invasion to come back. If anything, I expect Dominion to be the Invasion substitute. That's what it seemed like to me. But Territories is something that's easily forgeable as a game type. I mean, you just add the Territories to just about any map.
Right.
And, I mean, that's it.
Exactly.
It's a simple game type. It's
but
a classic
Invasion,
game type.
Invasion is a little more complex in the fact that you have to have maps that support the game mode. And then, yeah, I have a feeling that would also... It was an interesting idea, but I do have a feeling this, actually, after you mentioned that, I do have a feeling Dominion may be the replacement for Invasion. We've talked about this for about 20 minutes, though, so let's move on to the new multiplayer map for War Games that we got announced this weekend. It's Solus, which is a symmetrical map, and for how IGN compared it was, it's kind of like Narrows, not quite. There's certain aspects of a lot of different Halo maps that have been made in the past that you can kind of pull from this. Narrows is definitely one of them. There's a little bit of a lockout feel. It's very Forerunner heavy, but for the most part, this map doesn't really feel like it's a remake of anything specific.
No, it pulls
in
from
fact,
a lot of
all
different
of the maps,
elements.
All the maps really seem to be new, except for Haven. Haven's really the only one that we can really kind of go back and resemble something. And most of the people compare Haven to Guardian from Halo 3.
Yeah.
Because you pretty much have the semicircle that's on the outside, and then you have the upper and lower midsections. It's definitely not anywhere the same, and the gameplay doesn't even flow the same as it does on Guardian. But in terms of just kind of general layout of how you can move around the map, Guardian is probably really close.
I'm trying to think of what Solace reminds me of.
See, the color palette doesn't match anything, though.
No.
I mean, the closest...
It really doesn't.
The closest color palette that I can think of that comes to mind is something like High Noon. The color palette is very similar to High Noon. The very tan, reddish kind of color. But in terms of map layout and flow, I can't think of any other Halo map that resembles what Solace plays like or feels like. So I'm really excited to play on it. The gameplay on it looks really fun. There's lots of different places that you can go. One of the sides of the base is actually kind of built into, it looks like natural rock formation. So one side is actually open out maybe on a cliff edge or something, and then one's embedded into like a cliffer or something like that. And then there's a bunch of little pathways in the middle and around the sides, and you can jump from top mid to bottom mid for flag runs and all that stuff.
So there seems like three levels of verticality, basically. You have like kind of the, you have the top section, you know, that you can run up to from the bases. Then you have the middle, you know, main arena. And then you can go down into the bottom of that energy burst section. I don't know what that thing is. The big glowing spire
of some
Covenant, or not Forerunner power in the middle. So,
kind of the, it's not exactly the same because this one's Covenant, but kind of like the energy that goes up from Assembly.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. I don't think we saw anyone try to go into it, so I don't know if it actually does any damage or anything, but there is a hole in the middle, so you can fall through the middle if you don't make your jump correctly.
I don't want to be, like, quoted as absolute on this, but I think I saw somebody jump through it and survive. I think. Which seems strange, because it looks like if you jumped into that thing, it would just, like, vaporize you.
Yeah. It could just be purely aesthetic. We've seen that in other parts of Halo before as well.
But I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying with this big old energy thing coming out of the middle, you would assume that maybe that might kill you if you jump into
it.
Right,
right.
But, if it helps the map flow, then totally, just keep it aesthetic.
Yeah. I want to say there's more like four layers of the map, because there's two layers definitive in the middle, and then you have pretty much two different sniper towers from either base, so that's three layers. And then on the sides of the level, that's almost like a separate level. It's in between top, mid, and lower mid, kind of like it ramps down, and then you can go around, and then it ramps down again into the bottom middle. So in my mind, there's almost more like four levels throughout the entire map. And just with how it's laid out, there's lots of open places on the map, especially if you're up top, but there's also lots of little nooks and crannies that you can duck behind. So it has, and especially in the base area where you're going for a flag or maybe a bomb run or something like that, those are more enclosed areas that you can lose people in. And then the middle parts where it's really wide open. Good for anything that's really on foot. Capture the flag, Slayer. No vehicles pretty much on this map, but it looks really fun to play. You can fall off to your death on the sides and definitely through the middle. For the most part, though, it looks like a really fun map. All the maps that we've seen so far look like really fun maps.
Yeah, none of them look, you know, terrible.
Yeah.
They look good.
Yeah. I think from all the maps we've seen, Haven might get tired out really quick, because as we saw with the Halo Reach beta, I mean, people liked Powerhouse and I am blanking, Sword Base when during the beta. But then when the game came out, those maps were the least played maps that you could find in any of the maps played on Halo Reach.
Yeah.
I mean, they were played for maybe like the first week or month or so consistently, but after that, once we got the new maps, people really didn't play those as much anymore. And I have a feeling Haven is going to draw a lot more focus on the competitive side of things, just because it's very symmetrical. It's a smaller map designed for kind of 4v4 Team Slayer. And then Regicide, which got revealed at PAX, being basically the Juggernaut replacement, more or less. It's good for that, but in terms of these bigger team games, which I think 343 is really emphasizing on for Halo 4, we're not going to see Haven be pulled that much into the mix, I don't think. So we'll have to see the kind of crowds that get pulled for Halo 4, what the majority of the community base is going to be, whether it's going to be a lot more of this team-oriented gameplay, or whether or not it's going to be more of the classic Halo where it's Capture the Flag and Slayer.
I think it has a lot to do with whether or not people decide that they want to play their custom games with the armor abilities and stuff intact, or if they want to play classic Halo. I think if you see the armor abilities stay intact, then maybe the objective game types will be a little more popular.
Possibly. It all depends on what customizability 343 is putting into the game. And I want to say it's going to be a lot. That would be my gut feeling, is that they're putting in... I mean, they're going really far to make all of these changes, and they're aware that people are kind of hanging on to the classic feel. I mean, there's a lot of people that still play Halo 3. There's a lot more people that stayed playing Halo 3 than people stayed playing Halo 2 when the newest game came out. And the fact that there are people there that like that quote-unquote classic experience, I think for 343 to pull all those options out would be not in their best interest. So I definitely feel that for custom games, there's going to be an even greater set of customizability in terms of the game types and the options that we can set for all the different game modes that are being added to Halo 4.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly even more for the more classic game types like Slayer and CTF and Oddball.
It all depends on how much they want to be able to foster the Halo community. Like, yeah, there's a group, I mean, there's the vast majority of Halo players are just, you know, maybe not casual, but they're not into the customization aspect of Halo. They're going to play Halo for multiplayer until they get tired of it, and then they're going to move on to, you know, whatever new Call of Duty game's coming out, or the next big FPS multiplayer craze.
Yeah, but taking that, you have to look at the longevity of the game then. You have to see the people that are going to be playing it almost day in and day out, even a year or two after the game is out, like us for Reach.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the vast majority of players aren't going to be playing like that. They're not going to be into the customs, but the ones who stay on are going to be the extremely dedicated.
Right.
And the question is, how long does 343 want to keep those people around? Those are the people who, you know, stayed playing Halo 3 after Halo Reach was out for like a year and a half. I mean, these are the people who played Halo 2, you know, right up until the Xbox 360 came out and then kept playing, you know.
Right. I want to say, for the most part, for matchmaking, they're going to change it to where they're going to push people into how they think Halo 4 multiplayer is evolving to. I think for matchmaking, that's how it's going to be. And then the ability to go back and kind of play that classic feel of Halo is going to be left to customize in custom war games options. I think that's the best way to attack it, and I have a feeling that's what they're doing.
So the problem scenario I'm kind of seeing is there's this huge backlash against the armor abilities and the gameplay customization as far as, you know, the tactical and support packages, And then your loadouts.
Right.
If there's a big backlash against that and people want to play classic Halo, and I suspect that those people are going to be at least fairly big into the community, you know? I mean, they're going to be probably more community-focused people.
Mm-hmm.
Because those kind of armor ability additions seem like they were tailored to attract the Call of Duty player, that style of player, the player who has become accustomed to, okay, I'm going to play, and as I play, I'm going to unlock all of these things that I can then use, you know, in my next gameplay.
I can kind of see
weapons,
that.
Unlocking perks, things like that.
I can kind of see that, but from what I've seen, how they've implemented some of the stuff, and granted, most of this is based off speculation. I haven't played everything that's out there, and I won't be able to until November 6th. But from what I've seen and from what I've heard that 343's done with Halo 4 in terms of the armor abilities, the tactical packages, the support package, if they play their cards right and they make it to where the systems are balanced and fair for the most part across the board, where, yeah, you have little advantages here and there, but it's not overwhelming to where someone isn't unbeatable, then I think a lot of people are going to be more comfortable with transitioning to the new gameplay style of Halo 4. There's definitely going to be people that's like, this is not Halo. I want my ability to drop the flag and be able to like take out all the armor abilities and stuff. There's always going to be those people that are like, no, we want Halo for what Halo originally started back in 2001, and you can't avoid that. But I think for the majority of the people, they're going to see the changes after a month or so. I think people are going to realize that 343 does know what they're doing. They have implemented a system that is still balanced and is still enjoyable to play. And I think people will start adopting that new playstyle that they've basically engineered for Halo 4 and possibly future Halo titles.
Yeah, I don't see like these new additions being rolled back in Halo 5 and Halo 6 unless they just bomb completely.
Yeah, like Armor Lock.
Yeah.
I think with the addition of making Sprint not an armor ability, because in Reach that was one of the significant issues. It's like being able to sprint, almost everyone chose that.
Well,
it's just one of those core things. It's like, why can't you do that always? You're a Spartan. You should be able to run whenever you need to run. I think moving that out of the armor ability category, making it something that's baseline to everyone, was a very smart move. And I think it opens up the level playing field of armor abilities for Halo 4. I think it makes it a little bit more easier to deal with having other armor abilities and people using something else other than Sprint.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem with that, too, is you have all these different armor abilities, but if one becomes so incredibly useful that there's no reason for anybody to use anything other than that, you know, Sprint, for example, if you, you know, don't want to use Armor Lock, that was obviously the choice to go with. Because mm-hmm. Sprint gave you a massive advantage, you know. If you can run away from somebody who's pegging you, you know, right before you die, that's a big advantage. We'll have to wait and see if any of the new armor abilities, if like one stands out as being incredibly overpowered or too useful to the point where if you use anything else, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage.
Yeah. And I can't think of one that really holds a disadvantage over the other. Now, we did talk about, it was either last show, I guess it was the last show, about, or maybe the show before, combining some of the specializations. So there's one where you're in a vehicle, you take a little less damage when you're hitting a vehicle, and then there's one for weapon cooldowns turret overcharge or overheats occur a little bit slower than they normally do. Now, I don't know how drastic the effect is. I think it's very minimal. Like maybe you can get off another 5 shots or so, and maybe you can take 2 or 3 more bullets to a warthog or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think they've they're going to be that stupid to where they don't balance those kind of things out. I think they're really going to look to make sure those things are will evenly play out in most scenarios. And most of it's used to gear towards your style of gameplay. So if that's how you play, then you're obviously going to have some edge over someone else already because you know how to play that play style. And this kind of just enhances your edge just a little bit more. It's not something to completely say, okay, you're doing this activity here, we're going to give you godlike powers. It's not like that. It's something where it's enhancing how you play. And I think that's probably one of the key things to a lot of these new armor abilities and specializations, is that it's not necessarily a power-up, but it's more of just kind of one of those little helpers to your skill set.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it.
And also, there's going to be a lot more customization, so even if there is like one area that, you know, there's an obvious choice that you need to pick if you don't want to be at a disadvantage. I mean, you have two other areas. Like, if there's an armor ability that's too overpowered, you're still going to have the support package and tactical package, you know, to choose from, that people will probably mix and match and make their own little builds.
Yeah. And maybe they'll learn from Reach, and they'll leave the option in there to easily patch some of the armor abilities if something like Armor Lock pops up again where one's overpowered, and they do something where it's not like the title update for Reach where they actually make a patch and apply it globally and not just do it in certain playlists. I think that was one of the more stupid things that they did, was not completely update the game.
Right.
But that's my opinion. All right, moving on. Did you have something else?
No, I was going to talk about the weapons. I was going to transition.
Oh, okay.
To the new stuff. You want to talk about that for a second?
What new weapons are we talking about? I know there's the incinerator cannon.
Yeah, that one.
We did actually see that. That's something new that we've heard about it, but we haven't actually seen much of it. But now we have actual gameplay footage of it. So yeah, go ahead and talk about that a little bit while I shut up my birds.
Yeah, so it's like a rocket launcher. I think it comes with 4 shots or 3, I don't remember, but basically you fire it off. You get the big, you know, incendiary explosion, and then it sends out little, you know, little flak bombs that spread out from the initial explosion and then explode themselves. So there's like an area of effect with it. Basically like a wide range rocket launcher.
So I like to compare this to the Borderlands Bouncing Betty grenades, where like for the incendiary cannon, the first shot you have is basically direct hit on wherever it goes, and then based off that explosion, it spawns about 7 or 8 little
mini bombs.
Yeah, mini bombs, or as Josh Holmes called it, pods.
Mini pods.
Mini bombs.
Bomb pods. Yeah. We need to come up with a name for that. Our own little nickname.
Yeah, like we did for the Beaver Zone.
Yes.
I used that in a call out a couple of months ago, and people were like, "What?"
Go to Beaver Zone.
Go to the Beaver Zone.
Get in the Beaver Zone now.
So it's an interesting weapon, more or less.
Pod babies.
Do what? Pod babies?
Pod babies, yes.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I think that if you kill the entire team with a single incendiary cannon blast, you should get a Podtacular medal.
I see what you did there. So, yeah, it incinerates everything just like all the other Promethean weapons. Could you really tell what exact damage it did? Because I know there's a lot of direct hits from it that we got. Or from the couple of shots I saw, it was pretty much direct hits on whoever they were shooting at. So I don't know what the splash damage is like. But I'm guessing from purely speculation, direct hits are definitely one shots, and then it blooms into these other 7 or 8 pods that bounce around, almost in like a 3 to 4 meter radius out from the person. I think the main splash is probably kind of small, and then with the other pods going out, that's where you get the remaining quote-unquote splash damage like you would with regular rockets or the fuel rod.
Yeah. I assume that the pods don't do very much damage, or likely even like take your shield out, because that seems like it would be way overpowered.
I would guess maybe half shields, maybe 2/3 shields.
Yeah.
Josh Holmes did say that if the pods touch a player, they do catch on fire and incinerate. So my guess is what he meant by that is if you don't have shields and you get hit by one of those pods, you die, basically. There's enough, I guess, quote-unquote firepower, to incinerate someone if they get touched by that. But I want to say if they have shields, then it probably just takes out their shields.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't imagine that you have a fully shielded Spartan, you get hit by one of those tiny pods, and then you instantly die. Because that would be a pretty big splash radius compared to, like, rockets or something. Granted,
Go ahead.
It's very focused because it's just 8 things that kind of go out in a ring, but that still doesn't quite make sense.
I want to see it used against a vehicle just to see what it does. If it's a direct hit, will it take the vehicle out, say like a Warthog?
I would guess not, because you can still shoot a Warthog with a rocket and it won't completely blow it up. They'll do a good amount of damage to it. And you can do, and same thing for the fuel rod, so I would guess with
in
the incinerator
game?
Cannon. Halo 4.
In Halo 4, you can't take out a Warthog with a rocket?
I mean, you can take out everyone driving it if you hit it right, but even in Reach, you can hit a Warthog with a rocket and it can still be drivable. You might take out the gunner or the driver, but it's still drivable.
Hmm.
I'm sure you've had to have run into an instance where you've shot a vehicle with a fuel rod
or
a rocket.
Yeah, maybe I just don't remember, but like
it happens
a
lot.
In Halo 3, like that was the point of the rocket launcher hitting your vehicle. Like it explodes, your vehicle's gone. Like you're dead.
No, and well.
But I mean,
for,
I understand
what
you're saying.
I play
in
for
Halo
Reach.
4, like it takes out the players, but it just seems like it's weird that this
That's how it's been for Halo 3 and Halo Reach. You can hit an all-on Warthog with a rocket. You can hit it like maybe in the back corner or something. Most of the time, it'll kill both players, but the hog is still drivable. Granted, it doesn't take much more to take out the hog. Like if you hit it with a grenade or something, it'll explode. But you can still take a hefty amount of damage in it without completely blowing it up. And a direct rocket hit and a direct fuel rod hit will not 100% of the time take out a Warthog or a Ghost. And it also depends on where it gets hit. Like, if you hit it in the engine block, it's going to blow up. Or it should.
Yeah.
But if you hit, like, the back corner where the gunner is, like where the brake light is, it's not necessarily going to blow up every time.
Right. I believe you. That just seems strange.
Yeah. Look for it next time you play, like, big team heavies or something. You'll start to notice it.
It's been so long since I played Halo Reach. I need to get back into it. I need to get Xbox Live.
Yeah. I had Live for you. You could have come and joined us.
Yeah.
You said you were going to come join us.
Yeah, this coming Monday, I will try my hardest to make it to Monday Night Matchmaking.
Believe it or not, I have a 2-month code. From a Halo 2 limited edition that I bought recently.
Do those things still work after that long?
I have the code here. I don't know if it works. I haven't logged into my Xbox and see if it pops up yet, but I would assume a code's a code, that it doesn't ever expire in its code database. So my guess is that, yeah, it probably still works. I'll check it tonight after we're done recording.
All right.
I have plenty of other 1 months as well, so I have codes that you can use.
All right,
campaign information. Let's move on to some of that, because we're running on an hour, and I didn't think we were going to actually be this long.
There's just so much new information.
I know, especially multiplayer.
Yeah.
Campaign, we got a couple of glimpses into the first and third campaign levels. I guess those are kind of some of the ones that don't give too much of the core story away. The first one being you're on the Fort of the Dawn, you're basically fighting your way out. We see some quick time events, I think, for the most part. Did you see the part where the chief was basically climbing up the elevator shaft? And you're gone, aren't you? You had to leave. So did you see the part where the chief was climbing up the elevator shaft? Do you remember seeing that part?
No, I have intentionally stayed away from all campaign information and videos on purpose.
All right.
So, I mean, well, you can spoil it for me if you want to. I didn't want to see it.
From a storyline perspective, all the gameplay footage from the campaign stuff is not spoilerific at all.
Okay.
So feel free to go watch it afterwards. No spoilers. There's like just some few gameplay features that are in there that are pretty interesting. But do you remember back from E3 some of the what would be QuickTime events if they actually had like press X to block for the
when the chief has to like
block like that the knight.
Door and then he's like trying to rip it open, you know?
Yeah. And then there was during the E3 one, there was the knight that came up and smacked him. Yeah, there's a scene in one of the campaign videos that it looks like Chief's basically climbing up an elevator shaft, and there's stuff flying down, debris from the Fort of Dawn basically collapsing under the pull of whatever is pulling the Fort of Dawn into Requiem, and other things just exploding and everything else. And it looks like pretty much those could be quick time events. Again, there's no pop-up on the screen to indicate that they're pushing a button, and for the sake of the video, it's probably scripted. The campaign video definitely looks like an older build of Halo 4. At least the QuickTime event in question that I'm talking about. The gameplay aspect of it, where they're actually he's fighting the Covenant, the Elites, and the Grunts, that looks like it's probably more updated. One other thing that I found pretty interesting in the first campaign level of the video that we saw was it looks like to certain parts of the ship that you're going through, you basically lose gravity. So it has that same vacuum sound where all the sounds are muffled and you have really low gravity. So I guess that's kind of compared to Halo 2 when you're out in the Cairo station. Kind of like that.
Yeah.
So this first level is very reminiscent of Cairo Station and Pillar of Autumn from Halo 1. I forget what the first level is called in Halo 1. I think it's Pillar of Autumn.
Pillar of Autumn.
Yeah.
And that's probably intentional, you know, bring it full circle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very reminiscent of Cairo Station and Pillar of Autumn. I have a feeling the gameplay is going to be very similar as well. It is nice to see, however, that the environment on the Fort of Dawn is not the standard, like, hall-to-hall, very... you can tell that stuff's not duplicated, that the environments are very unique, and it looks like you're actually traveling through a dynamic environment, almost.
Yeah, it's very... not narrow,
you haven't seen
I guess,
it, so.
as you might expect.
Yeah, it's a little more open. Yeah, a little more open, not as crowded. For the third campaign level, this is... I'm guessing where we kind of get our introduction to the Promethean enemies, because we see Covenant drop pods, where that's one of the new delivery methods. They're a lot bigger, and I think they pretty much host a full squad, so it's like your three grunts and your elite squad that go around, and the drop pods are a lot bigger than they've been in the past. There's still the Phantom dropships, and in this video clip for the third level, we see some assassinations of Promethean Knights, and I have to say, those are some of the coolest-looking assassinations. So once you go watch that video, you'll see what I'm talking about, but one of the assassinations that you can do on a knight is you basically hit in the back, you grab the sword, their sword hand, you know, that little blade that they have? You take that and you jam it up its chest and you rip it out. So
that's pretty cool.
That is one of the coolest assassination animations, and I am really looking forward to doing that to some knights.
Yes, over and over and over again. Many times.
One other thing that people have been speculating on, this might be the only spoilerific thing, but it's kind of mute unless you're like really into the lore of Halo.
The Prometheans work at KFC.
I did not say that. But the ones that we saw in the video, the highlights that they had in the skull was blue. So some people are theorizing that the blue effect that we see on the knights are actually the color that they have during nighttime. So if it's nighttime, all the energy that they have is blue, or the light emitting from them is blue, and then during the daytime it's orange. So that seems to be the consensus going around, because that's really the only two times, even in past screenshots and during the E3 campaign demo. Remember when they did all the flashes of the different scenes and we saw that one blue knight?
Yeah.
That was during a nighttime scene as well. So there may be some backing to that, where the knights are actually blue at night and then orange during the day.
That seems like it would be a strategic thing in a way, because if you're glowing orange in the middle of the night, you're going to be easier to see.
Yeah, it's like fire. You're going to be, yeah. And it's harder to spot that during the daytime as well.
Yeah. The blue would show up easier against the daylight as opposed to the orange. So
yeah, it's almost like a camouflage technique.
Yeah.
So there you go, people. That's why they're blue and orange.
Yep.
And we haven't seen any other colors. So it seems to be a pretty good argument for that.
They glow chicken when they work at KFC.
Spartan Ops, we also have some gameplay footage for that. There's nothing really new in here other than it's definitely a different mission. You get a different aspect on some of the things that you're going to be able to do in Spartan Ops. The one mission in question, there's a big open area that's basically a vehicle battle, and all the enemies have waypoints over them. So I think that's probably just mission specific to whatever Spartan Ops mission it is. But the fact that we have wide open areas with vehicle battles with like 40, 50 plus enemies, I think that's going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really reminiscent of Firefight, and actually something that may be a little beyond Firefight.
Firefight meets campaign missions.
Yeah.
Meets co-op.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's obviously its own thing, but it seems more involved than Firefight, and I like how each mission, I assume, is going to be pretty distinct from any of the others. You know, and there's going to be a story attached to it. They're doing cutscenes for Spartan Ops, from what I understand, so you'll have that to look forward to. It'll be like watching a TV series, except you're playing it,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I got into a conversation with someone at work the other day about how video games are basically like interactive movies,
mm-hmm.
where there's a good amount of them that are, you have the cutscenes that are in between that kind of build on the story, but then there are certain parts that you play as the character and you get attached to the character in ways that you wouldn't normally do in a movie, but similar to how you do in a book. So whenever you read a book, you kind of, for some books, depending on how they're written, you really take on the role of that person in the book and you really start to relate for them and you kind of feel the emotions they feel and all that stuff. So it's interesting to see how video games are becoming more and more like a means of storytelling, similar to how books and movies do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's closer to books even, because like you were saying, books provide introspection into the character. I mean, there's a lot of asides in books where the character is thinking to themselves and you get a direct view into that character's brain, what they're thinking, what they think about what's going on around them. Whereas in movies, movies can do that, but it's not a common technique. Yeah, generally,
it's based on a third-person perspective in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's still hard to do that in a video game, but I think it's the interactive part of video games really feels that specific part where books make up for that.
Yeah.
So you get the visual information that books have to take time to explain the environment, and then the fact that you're playing as the character, that kind of fills in the book side where it goes into, okay, this person is feeling this emotion. You're actually feeling, if a game is doing its job, you're actually feeling that emotion as that person in the universe.
Yeah, the introspection is yours.
Exactly.
It's not like coming out and like you're hearing the character talk to themselves and, you know, inside their own brain or whatever, but you get the introspection. You understand that based on your own experience. And even in a way, that's how video games are special, because everybody's going to experience those situations differently. So I think in a lot of ways, everybody's going to come away with their... I mean, in Spartan Ops 2, the Spartan that you make is yours, right? I mean, it's not like your Spartan... I don't know, obviously, but I assume that it's not going to be like a set character. It's going to be like, this is the character you made, that's your Spartan, so you get to experience your Spartan however you want to, and it's not written into the story a certain way.
Uh-huh.
Whereas with the Chief, it's a little different. That seems like the introspective part is more important in campaign mode, where
yeah,
you are a set character. Like John 117 is a character that has background that they've fleshed out in multiple mm-hmm. books.
Well, and they've kind of found a way to kind of direct how you should be feeling about a character.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, granted, that's how books do it too. But the fact that they can do that in a video game and portray that through events that go on through the campaign and through the cutscenes, I think that's what makes Halo games one of the best franchises out there, in my opinion.
Well, it also
and then the expanded universe as well.
It emphasizes the importance of Cortana as a character. Because mm-hmm. if you're trying to convey what you're supposed to be feeling at any given time, Cortana is a pretty easy way to do that. Because she's always there in your mind, telling you what's going on. In a way, she kind of guides the emotions that the developer might want you to have at any given time. Just how she reacts to the things that are happening around her, and happening around the Chief. Because she seems to have more emotion than the Chief does. And she's artificial. Yeah. So...
Yeah, well, they said that in the panel at PAX. Cortana yeah. seems more human than Chief does, which is ironic because that's completely opposite of both of their roles.
Because the Chief is
human, but kind of more to the letter of, yes, I'm obeying the orders I'm given, where Cortana is more kind of assessing the greater picture and is a little more emotional in that respect.
Mm-hmm. So I can see how Cortana will play a huge role in Halo 4 if she essentially represents the Chief's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously they've stated that the Chief has more dialogue in this game, so expect more Steve Downs than ever.
Yep.
Get ready for some Steve Downs.
A lot more than Halo 1.
Yep.
how many lines did he have in Halo 1?
I don't even know.
Like, not that many.
Can you count the number on your two hands? Like
probably, because there's the few. I think there's three on the Pillar of Autumn. There's two at the end of the Pillar of Autumn. None in Halo. None there. None there. I think the biggest dialogue part is whenever they're in the control room. I think that, and then. At the end of the level when they're on the longsword. I think those are pretty much the two biggest uses of dialogue. So I want to say maybe 20 or 30 lines of dialogue.
Yeah. Not very much.
No, not very much at all. And now we have like a library of yes. lines for Master Chief for this game.
And an entire extended universe mm-hmm. that they probably never even imagined when they went to develop Halo 1.
Well, I mean, this is 343 now. This isn't Bungie anymore.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying that they are continuing Bungie's work. Bungie,
right.
Bungie was around when they started work on the extended universe, and then they handed it off to 343, and now 343 has free reign over that. But
uh-huh.
all of the Halo books, I mean, well, not all of them, but a lot of the Halo books were made under, you know, Bungie's discretion.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm saying that when they made Halo 1, they probably never imagined that the universe would blow up as large as it did by the end of Halo Reach.
Probably not, no. And I mean, it's huge. There's 14 books to add to the fiction of Halo. One of them yeah. is based off of a game, but other than that, there's a lot of backstory, and there's still a lot of stuff within the Halo universe that we have no clue about.
Oh yeah,
it's like the more and more books that we get, the more and more we're like, well, how did this happen so many years ago, and why is how did the Covenant join up and all that stuff?
I'm still waiting for a Halo murder mystery. Like, you play as a civilian in the Halo universe trying to, like, solve a mystery involving, like, an elite or something.
I don't know if we'll ever get that officially.
No, I don't think we'll ever get
anything. I think that'll be more of a fanfic if someone actually does that.
That's what I'm going to do. Work on that fanfiction right now.
Is that what you're going to do? All right.
Yes. Traxxas worker finds a dead elite in his warehouse. Turns out the elite was like a huge...
Brent's new book coming out.
Yes.
Coming out in 5 years, sponsored by Podtacular.
Universally panned. Everybody hates it.
Nah.
Brent Horsley's book provides no good insight into the Halo universe. Just completely ancillary.
I'm sure people would enjoy it. I'm sure if you put a lot of time and effort into it, people would enjoy it. I mean, look at the comic that Leviathan put out. I mean, that wasn't even officially done, but it was very much supported by Bungie. They really enjoyed the work he did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's lots of community content out there. I mean, look at Red versus Blue. Look at Red versus Blue. I mean, they're definitely not canonical.
But I'm saying, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's an extent of the universe that can be very believable.
Yeah.
In how it relates to the rest of Halo. Like, if 343 wanted to make it canon, they could easily make it canon.
Yeah. They could incorporate it.
Right.
That's the nice thing about the extended universe, is that you're pretty much free to just, if you want to add it, go ahead.
Reason why I like Halo. It's a playground for people to just mess around with in every aspect of the game, whether it's Forge, whether it's campaign, whether it's going and writing your own fan fiction and sending it out to people, and just having your own viewpoint on things, and it doesn't matter whether or not it's official, but it's cool, and if it's believable that it fits within the realm of the Halo universe, then yeah, why not?
There's so many areas of creativity that a fan can get into with Halo, and that's what I've always loved about it, and that's why I love the community so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially with the advent of Forge and screenshots, and I mean, you can basically learn, you know, basic photography with Halo, if you wanted to. You know, I mean, with screenshots and things. Like, there are good screenshots out there, and there are very bad screenshots, and there are ways to get the good screenshots. There's moments where
I don't know about photography,
but I'm saying, you know, you're getting the sense of
what's a good shot.
What is a good shot? Photography, like you're gonna play Halo and then on you're gonna go out and start your own studio or something. But
that would be an interesting success story.
Yes,
I got into this job because of playing Halo.
But I can definitely see, like, maybe if you were a teen growing up, you know, enjoying making screenshots, you might be able to go on to do photography if you wanted to. If you'd gotten the sense of getting a good shot, you know, a good sense of environment and lighting, just stuff like that. Like, I'm not saying it's going to teach you, but you could get the baseline kind of idea of what you should probably be doing.
I guess so, yeah. That kind of...
And even, I mean, it's like fan fiction. Like, even if you write a fanfic and it's not, you know, amazing, if you continue writing fan fiction, you're going to get better at writing. Yeah, right. I mean, and you're not even writing for your own universe. You're writing within a universe that's already been laid out for you, but just the act of writing itself would make you a better writer. Like, it doesn't matter how awful at writing you are, the more you do it, you're going to get better at it.
Exactly.
You know, making films in Halo 4. That's a...
Machinima, you know, yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I mean, good example is our good friend Nevin Douglas over at White Point and Cool Legacy Productions. He has Playtime, and a lot of people really enjoy that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there's definitely interesting ways to really kind of find a gift or talent through Halo, believe it or not. But yeah, the possibilities are pretty much endless for what you can do with Halo.
Maybe that should be Halo 4's tagline.
The possibilities are endless. I'm not sure how well that would go over.
Go ahead.
I was going to just get on back on topic, but what you were going to say?
I was going to say I really like when they were doing the Halo 2 advertising campaign on television. And like, I don't remember which prophet it was. It was like Regret or someone. They're like, some said this day would never come. What are they to say now?
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's truth. That's truth.
We need like an awesome tagline for Halo 4 like that to just get me super excited. You know, like when the Halo 3 trailer came out.
I got one word for you.
I am
Chief.
Your...
Chief. That's it. Chief's back.
The Chief's back.
The Chief is back.
And then like dubstep.
Well, we have dubstep. we have the second soundtrack, which is basically dubstep / techno remixes of the Halo 4 soundtrack. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on from all the media coverage this weekend?
Yes, jackals. Jackals look different.
You and your jackals.
They have
all of them look different. The elites look different. The grunts look different. I don't know about the hunters because we haven't had any screenshots of hunters come out yet. But
I think we have. I think I saw a render of.
Yeah, oh, right. There is a render. That's right.
Yes. It looks like a hunter. It doesn't look a whole lot different. But I'm saying the jackals have a distinct new model. They don't. I mean, it's almost like they look like a new species. I don't have a problem with it. They kind of look like the Halo 1 jackals. They don't have an elongated kind of jaw, you know, beak thing like they did in Halo 2, Halo Reach, and Halo 3. But they kind of look like Godzilla in a way. That's been the joke going around.
Godzilla?
Yes. I think they look kind of cool, actually. They look happy all the time, like they're like constantly smiling. I don't know. Some people have been having like a big problem with it. Like, I don't know what their problem is, but you're going to be fighting Prometheans too often to care about what the jackals look like.
Yeah. I mean, they look, the jackals and the grunts look a little more reptilian, like the scaly skin, the scruffy look.
Yeah. Elites, you can definitely see kind of that leopard pattern, lizard skin thing going on.
It's a lot more serious than it has been in the past.
This is serious business, guys.
It's very serious.
Halo 4 is serious business.
Mm-hmm. Don't you joke around.
That can be the tagline in Halo 4. This time it's serious.
Maybe. One thing that I forgot to mention that popped up over the weekend was there's the infection game mode for Halo 4. You're actually going to be playing as an infection form. So you're going to be playing as a flood. So,
really?
Yeah. So you'll basically, whenever you're... And there's not many details on this. There's just a screenshot of, I think, maybe a Game Informer leak or some other magazine link with an image on it with infection. But yeah, the new infection game mode, if you're infected, you're basically going to be a flood combat form, which I think it's an interesting idea, because if you think about it, that's how infection should be. You should be turning into a flood kind of zombie-like character. How the gameplay is going to happen, I'm not exactly sure. What I would guess is that you don't have any shields. You probably have like health or something, and it probably replaces your shields. And then you go up and you have to actually hit the person. I don't think you'd actually spawn with weapons or anything. But I think having like a health buff, and then you just go up and bash people. So basically like a true infection game mode, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah. It's still odd to me that spawned off of a custom game type that they made in Halo 2.
I know, right? Well, I mean, Griffball spawned off of Red versus Blue.
Yeah.
So weird things happen. It's just like internet memes. You don't know if something's going to catch on, but when it does, everyone knows about it.
That's what we need to work on in Halo 4. We need to make the custom game type that is going to be present as an official game type in Halo 5.
I love speed. I want them to have something like the Insanity game type that Bungie gave us. I want to be able to have those kind of options back into Halo 4.
I want to play cat and mouse in Halo 4.
Mongoose and Wraiths.
Yes. Back in Halo 2, it was Ghosts and Wraiths.
Was it?
Yes.
Back on, I guess, Coagulation or Containment?
Yeah, Coag.
Coag.
Coag was the popular map for that.
Hemorrhage is just not an adequate replacement for Blood Gulch or Coagulation, in my opinion.
No, I think it's just not closed off. Like, I want it to be in an enclosed space. I want the canyon to completely surround me.
Yeah.
Why are we here?
It makes me want to kind of go back and play a little bit of Halo 2, to be honest. I have Halo 2 Vista. I want to just boot it up now. But yeah, so Infection, it looks like you're now going to be playing as kind of a Flood combat form.
That'll be cool.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. I'm curious to see how the gameplay is going to flow, because not having any weapons, you're definitely going to get some kind of like damage buff. And since you don't have shields, I have a feeling that your quote-unquote shields are just going to be your health, and it won't regenerate whenever you're a Flood form.
Hmm.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah. What's the name of the form that's like bloated and explodes into
the carrier form?
I want to be one of those. In Infection. Extremely slow and just like wobbling around. Just blow up.
Yeah, I want
to respawn out of one of those.
I don't think that would work for purposes of making the game flow.
Left for Halo.
It'd be interesting to see like a mod for that, but no, I don't think for Halo 4 it would flow very well, unfortunately. No. So we have some user submissions or listener submissions that we got for summer from last week that didn't make the timeline for last show, and some of them are for, I think a couple of them are for this week. Haven't looked through them in full detail, but let's go ahead and get to those since we're running on an hour and a half now. The first one comes from Bioman998. He writes, "What do you guys think about the Auto Sentry? Will it be a multiplayer pickup, and will it be balanced well? I noticed in the video where they showcased the Flagnum and the auto pickup, that when the flag was planted, it looked like for a second like a sentinel was above it. Maybe an objective protector of sorts, or maybe it was a delusional from excitement. I also think that the knights are insect-like from the six limbs. If you count the micro driver arms, I have no idea what six limbs are.
The six limbs,
Or if it's a movie, I don't know what it is.
Six limbs. It's a Halo fan fiction. It's about a knight that falls in love with a jackal.
Continuing on, and just one other thought. What do you guys think about the animation where the player helmet splits like the knight's and shows a skull now and then? Perhaps after a sword assassination, it could be a new haunted helmet. No. Last part, no. That's just silly. Having a Spartan helmet just split open and see someone's face, no. It could be like a haunted helmet, no. I'm just saying no to that one, sorry. The Auto Sentry, from what I played during PAX, it's not very powerful. Like, it takes about 3 or 4 seconds to deploy, and even after it's up, it can be taken out really easily. From my perspective, it's more as a deterrent. So if you get like tagged from it, you don't know if someone's actually shooting you or if it could be an auto sentry. So I think it's more of a defensive deterrent than anything else. And it's not a multiplayer pickup. It's a
armor ability
that you can have. I don't think you would necessarily get it in the ordnance drop either. But yeah, it's not something that you pick up. It's definitely an armor ability.
Yeah. Throw it out there. Defend yourself.
Exactly. For the thing where you saw a sentinel above someone that delivered the flag, I have no idea what you're talking about. And no, there's no sentinels in the game. You probably just saw a mirage of maybe what was left over from the waypoint marker on the flag, would be my guess. Other than that, no, there's not anything that comes up. So, you want to do the next one?
Yes. Eon Switchblade says, "Hey, PodTac, really enjoying the show. Glad to see Brent Gamer back. For good, right?" That's up to Dustin. But hopefully, yes.
It's up to you. As long as you make him.
Yeah, I'll be here. But, I mean, if I'm going to, like, make listeners run away from the show, it would be best for me to go. Super excited to hear what you think of Dominion Mode Solace and Flood Mode. Also, out of what we've seen, what's the helmet you see as your helmet? Thanks a lot, and keep on fragging trucks. I don't know the names of the helmets, so and I don't know.
I haven't seen all the helmets either. Like, I know there's videos out there, but I haven't gone through and looked through every single helmet yet. Because at this point, I've voiced my opinion about the specialization helmets, so I'm definitely not picking one of those. I honestly, if there's a Mark VI helmet that I can get on day one, then I'll probably go with that.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm rocking in Halo Reach right now. It took me a while to get there, but I started off with the default Mjolnir one that's in Halo Reach, and then once I was able to unlock the Mark VI, I went to the Mark VI. So I have a feeling if the Mark VI is available on launch, I will probably use the Mark VI.
I want a Mark V helmet in Halo 4.
Mark V?
Yes, because that was what I was using in Halo Reach right before I quit.
Aw, why'd you quit? Nah, that's cool. All right, so Brent has the Mark V, I have the Mark VI. Next submission that we have comes from Cloud Massacre. He writes in, "Dear Podtacular, this is Cloud again, and I have a few questions and ideas for you all to discuss during your episode. My first question is, how many submissions can we submit?" One per show is typically what we look to see. If you send in more than one submission, and they're not too long, sometimes we'll combine the two, but usually one per show is what we recommend. Second, do you guys think the Mammoth will be on some multiplayer maps like the Elephant on Sandtrap? No. It will not be. They haven't. 343 has not, like, said if they're going to be on it or not. But no, I strongly believe the Mammoth is purely something that's going to be in Spartan Ops.
I want real elephants.
I think they've said that though too. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But I'm pretty sure that they've said that the mech things, I forget what they're called, and the Mammoths are only available in Spartan Ops and the campaign.
Let's see. I've got a...
While you look...
Oh, the Cyclops. Yeah.
Cyclops, yeah.
There we go. It was going to bother me if I didn't. Those mechs called?
The Cyclops and the Mammoth are only going to be available in Spartan Ops and or campaign. And I want to say they've come out and said that. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure they have said that. Third, will the Hornet or the Falcon be returning to Halo 4? We haven't seen any human flying vehicle yet. So, I honestly don't know.
Actually, I'm reading that Cyclops was the Halo Wars mech, and the Mantis is the Halo 4 mech. But going back to the flyable
Mantis.
Human vehicles...
Mantis, Cyclops, close. the mech-looking thing is not going to be playable in multiplayer, essentially.
A Gundam, whatever. Not really. I wish there was a Gundam in Halo 4. That'd be great.
I would personally prefer having the Falcon in Halo 4 if we were picking between the two.
I didn't really like the Hornet that much.
I didn't either. Although, I would like to see for the Falcon in Well, actually, I take that back. Probably not. I was going to say seeing the driver have the machine gun that he can use, but thinking back on that, probably not the best idea.
Mm-mm.
There's probably a reason why they didn't have him reach multiplayer. But yeah, I don't know if... And the funny thing is that the Falcon is canonically before the Hornet.
Yeah. So, but it's better, you know, so whatever. Yeah,
exactly, right? And it depends on... Okay, we're kind of going on a lore tangent here, but if we look at where the Ford Unto Dawn was, they were at the Ark. What did they have when they were at the Ark? They had Hornets. So canonically, while the Ford Unto Dawn would be the only ship that would be there, you would probably be looking at Hornets. Until the Infinity arrived. But the Infinity arrives somewhere between the first third and the first half of the game. So we might not have any flying vehicles until then because we... let's see, the first flying vehicle we had in Halo 3... I want to say the third level? Was it the Storm that was the first one that we had the Hornets in Halo 3? I can't remember. Specifically,
I don't remember either. Yeah, I
mean, if that's the case, then
I don't think it was the Storm, but it might have been.
If that's the case, then I think for the most part, we might not see any air vehicles until the Infinity comes, and they may have a different air vehicle. So, yeah, that one's hard to judge. I'll just leave it at that. I honestly don't know. Out of the Hornet and the Falcon, I would like to see the Falcon return out of the two, but they may have a new air vehicle, or they may not have one at all. So we'll
see. I want to be able to grab on to a Promethean Watcher and fly around that way. And be able to shoot like sidearm while I'm flying around.
That would be funny. It'd be like a Halo Rodeo or of some kind.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Like, you can't control it, like, perfectly. Like, it kind of, like, flies around.
Exactly.
You just have to push it in the direction you want it to go.
or just punch it a few times.
Yeah.
Going on to, or returning to Clad Massacre's submission, he continues on saying, my fourth question is, will flood mode be replacing infection, or will they both be in the game? We just talked about that. It's probably going to be a replacement.
Yeah.
The next few questions I have are about Forge. Do you guys think there will be interactive items like buttons or pressure plates? I hope there are, but they haven't said anything.
I don't know.
Probably not, though, because that's kind of hard to implement. Yeah.
That would make us too happy.
And they got to save something for Halo 5 and 6, right?
Yeah.
And do you guys think items like crates and barrels will be more movable like Halo 3? Sure. I mean, they're removable in Reach. I'm not sure what he means by more movable, but yeah, I mean, crates and barrels have never been just a solid object that you can't move. So, you'll be able to move them around, I guess.
Yeah.
I found that items in Halo Reach were not very movable. I miss making zombie maps like Left 4 Dead. Also, how do you think the custom maps will play out in Infinity? Do you all think there will be a playlist with only custom content, or all the playlists will have a few custom maps? I think we'll see something like they did with Halo Reach. We'll start out with native hoppers with the maps that they've designed and the game types that they've come up with, and maybe after a couple of months when the community has started generating content, they'll start to incorporate custom maps.
Yeah,
for Halo 3 and they did for Halo Reach, right? They had their default hoppers, and then after a few months or so, they looked at kind of the custom content and started to evaluate those for matchmaking.
Yeah.
And they've always been community-centric, so I don't see why they wouldn't try to incorporate custom maps when a good number of them came out and were available. Next, I have a loadout idea that could work really well. You could have a sniper class with wet work and have an auto turret to warn you when someone comes near you. I think that would be a good combo. Thanks for reading my overlong submission. For the auto turret, it's not... I have a feeling you're kind of trying to compare it to Call of Duty, where the auto turret could be like a sensor or something. I don't think it's honestly going to be like that. And Halo is such a fast-paced game where you don't camp with the sniper. You're still actively moving around. So in my opinion, I don't think that... I mean, yeah, the combination will still work, but you're not going to be able to use the auto turret for how you think you're going to be using it in the scenario that you just pulled up.
I think if you're a sniper, you're probably going to want the jetpack, maybe.
Let's see. Out of the ones that are available, I mean, yeah, if you wanted to get up into nooks and crannies with a sniper, like people do on Hemorrhage, which is
cubbyhole
annoying as heck. Yeah, jetpack would be one that I think a lot of people would choose. I think camo though, active camo. Well,
obviously,
that's what you would want to use, really. Because you snipe someone and then they can't really pinpoint where you are.
And I mean, you're going to be standing still anyway, so.
Right. So I would say camo is what you would want to use. Anyways, moving on. Next one.
Jimmy Schmo says, "Hey guys, how's she be going, eh? Just wanted to get your thoughts on Mendicant Bias and if you guys think he will be in Halo 4 or have a significant role in it. He's such a major character in the lore, but has yet to make any sort of appearance in the game minus Halo 3 terminals. Also, I know you guys can't talk about it, but I just want to know if you guys have seen the leaks about campaign. A simple yes or no will suffice. Thanks, guys, and message me if you ever need me to be on the show sometimes."
I don't know what campaign leaks you're talking about. I mean, with all the information that came out this week, either the leaks were hidden or I just completely missed them, but I haven't really heard of any campaign leaks.
Well, I've been intentionally just staying away from all of the campaign stuff, like, as far as story goes, so even if it did leak, I'd be like, nope, I'm waiting until the game comes out so that I can enjoy it then.
Yeah. There was someone managed to get a screen cap from the PAX panel video, and there's a snippet in the Making Halo 4 video that they showed at PAX where you could see some text, and there's some insight into the backstory of Halo. We won't go into detail here because that's definitely kind of spoiler territory.
Spoilerific.
Yeah, definitely a little spoilerific. Such to the fact that one of my friends says he's not going to buy Halo 4 because it spoiled it for him, and he's going to buy it. He's going to buy it.
The game's ruined!
Yeah.
This is ruined!
He's still going to buy it. Yeah. But other than that, which I really don't classify that as a leak because they put that out there. They didn't blur it. If they thought that they would have known that someone would have tried to go out and do kind of text recognition on it. Because if you look at all the other videos they always have screens blurred out or blinked or something if they have sensitive stuff on it. So they intentionally left that there for a reason. And
old
people caught onto it. So I technically don't call something like that a leak, but that's the only kind of leak-esque thing for campaign that I can think of. And like Brent said, he's not following anything campaign related to Halo 4, so.
I don't even know who the main character is going to be.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Don't be that naive.
Do you get to play as Lord Hood?
I don't know if I would be wanting to play as Lord Hood.
Do I get to play as
I think Master
Ron
Chief's
Perlman?
A lot cooler. As who?
Ron Perlman.
Shoot, I forget who he is.
Does the voice of Lord Hood.
Oh, does he?
On Sons of Anarchy, even though I don't watch that show. He's Hellboy.
All right. Moving on, we have Dodger125 with our next submission. He writes, "Hey, got two things I want to talk about. Firstly, I want to mention what Dusty said about the soundtrack being epic movie pieces, which I agree with. We have to remember that these are samples, pieces that they gave us to get hyped. I wouldn't want thematic background music right now, but I definitely think it will be in the full soundtrack. Secondly, I want to mention the Flood. I know that many people hate fighting the Flood. I didn't mind it too much, but I'm really looking forward to fighting them in Halo 5 and 6. This is because this time around we'd be fighting with Promethean weapons designed for killing Flood. I think this addition will make the Flood combat more interesting, Imagine scattershotting Flood in the face and watching them disintegrate. Anyways, keep on fragging trucks. As far as the soundtrack goes, I have made the comparison where it sounds more like a movie, and I think most of the people that we've had on before kind of agree to that fact. We'll have to see how it plays out in the game and how it fits to how the game is being executed.
I'm still waiting on the Halo 4 Breaking Benjamin song. When are we going to get that?
Well, we only had one in Halo 2, right?
Yeah, that's the joke.
So we have to wait till Halo 5.
Yeah, blow me away.
I like that.
Only the strongest will survive.
Have you heard the new rendition with a lady that does a voiceover for certain parts? It's like all the music's the same, but there's now a female vocalist in the mix.
I want a female vocalist for Blow Me Away just completely. I'd just the whole song, female vocalist. And I want it to be like Jen Taylor.
I think that would be a little awkward, to be perfectly honest.
That would be amazing. Imagine Cortana singing Blow Me Away.
It would be cool, but the voice of Cortana does not go with that type of music. The styles just don't match. If you try to put Cortana's voice with singing a heavy kind of rock song like that,
okay, fair enough. Steve Downes sings Blow Me Away.
I don't know if that's better or worse. That would be weird too. Maybe Sergeant Johnson. How about Sergeant Johnson?
That would be strange.
Or grunt. Do a grunt. Have Jason Jones do it.
Only the strongest will survive.
I think that'd be funny.
We need heaven when we die.
I think that'd be funny.
Or an elite.
Only the strongest will survive.
Okay, now we're getting a little too nerdy here.
This is a Halo podcast, Dustin. You're free to nerd out to the full extent.
I know, but still, even in terms of like being a nerd, it's still getting a little nerdy.
This is the good stuff. This is what people love. This is why people tune in week after week.
I thought it was for the Halo news.
Well, they can get that elsewhere. I go read that. I mean, they can get their Halo news. They're looking for Halo
commentary.
And there
we go. We just lost 50% of our followers. Thanks. We'll be seeing you in another year.
Bye, everybody.
No, it's cool, but yeah, we're trying to keep up with the news, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, we're up with the news.
Yeah,
I bet we know more about Halo 4 than if you go to GameStop right now and you meet Joe Gamer, you know, buying whatever game.
Well, okay.
Then you know more about Halo 4.
That's kind of unfair though, because they have to know. Like, the people that work at GameStop have to know about a lot of games.
No, and, I'm just saying, I'm not saying the employees there. I'm just saying you know, dude who's going up there to buy video games, like someone who,
well, yeah,
you know, owns an Xbox 360 and, you know, enjoys games casually or even plays them every night. You know more about Halo 4 than that guy does, probably. Probably.
We run a freaking Halo podcast.
That's the point. That's what I'm saying. We're up on our news.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's delivery of the news that gives me, because, I mean, if you look at all the YouTube videos that have been put out over the past 5 days and all the other, like, articles that get put out, like, we don't really write that many articles for Podtacular. Like, our main content is the podcast, and we've just recently been starting to do videos and stuff, but I don't have enough time to write up everything, so... In terms of like being on top of the news from a podcast standpoint, yeah, we're on top of it. But from delivering news to people, yeah, that you need to go to HBO or the Halo Council or
We deliver the news. If like you want to know all of the Halo news that came out from a certain period of time, and you want it like all condensed into a 2-hour long show,
which we need to try to fix, by the way.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. As we get closer to Halo 4, there's going to be more and more information, and then naturally, we're going to have more to talk about, and the shows are going to be longer. No. I mean, we could do a 30-minute show, but I don't think it would be as interesting. It's not like we've been sitting here like going off on useless tangents the whole time. We've talked about some pretty significant things
right?
That we've learned over
but
the past.
As more and more news comes out, we'll have to be more succinct in our evaluations of what we think about it.
Yes.
And more to the point of, like, this is what's happening. But we have one more submission to wrap this up, because we are hitting our two-hour mark now. So why don't you finish it off, Brent?
All right. Skullman 4587 says, I love your show, and I have listened to the podcast since it came to iTunes. I just have one thing to point out, and I guess what is going to happen to Canada, and I guess what is going to happen in the campaign. In one of the previews, I have watched the Chief is walking to the big sphere, and what I think is that when he gets closer, it will open to reveal a Forerunner. I don't think it will be just any Forerunner, the Librarian. The, as I have been able to tell from the information I have, is the leader of the Forerunners.
This is where my lack of reading the Halo books comes into play. I am currently about 2/10 of the way through Cold Protocol. That would be a question for Jeff or one of the other guys that we have on the show from time to time. I doubt that... I'm not... So you're talking about in one of the previews you see Chief walking up to the cryptum,
mm-hmm.
which is what it's called. It's a cryptum. There's rumors going around of what's in it. No one's really said the Librarian. It's either Mendicant Bias or the Didact, and a lot more people think it's the Didact. So whether or not I'm depending on where you saw this, and depending on what part of the campaign it is, I don't think we'll ever see this cryptum open, or maybe it'll be really, really near the end of the game, but I have a feeling we will not see it open in Halo 4.
I've got a feeling it's going to be Sergeant Avery Johnson.
Revived for a third time.
You miss me, Chief? I'm back.
And then that'll be the end of Halo 4. It'll end on that cliffhanger.
He's like, I know everything that's going on this world. There's things we have to do in the next 2 video games.
It's like, I need Cortana.
Let's get going.
I need Cortana.
I need a weapon.
Oh, and the puns begin. All right. Well, that's it that we have for this episode of Podtacular. Hopefully we covered the information enough for you guys to really catch everything that was out. There are plenty of interviews out there as well that we did not cover. We covered pretty much the big stuff, like what there was kind of in video form regarding the campaign, War Games, and Spartan Ops. So if you want to go and watch any of the interviews, or there's some write-ups as well, there's places that you can find them everywhere. There's places on NeoGAF, and I'll include a link to pretty much one of the main threads on NeoGAF that has almost everything on it of what came out. There's stuff from IGN, there's stuff from Game Trailers, Machinima, GameSpot, Joystick. There's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still looking to try to find somewhat close to original video cuts so I can do some Pod TV stuff. Haven't found anything yet, but when I do, I will be putting a couple videos up about those over the next 2 or 3 days. So, thanks again, guys, for watching. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Zune or via RSS feed from our website, which is at podtacular.com. While you're there, check out the forums and go sign up and participate in some of the discussions that we have about other video games, Halo 4 discussions about all the information that's coming out, other little things that we like to talk about, computer stuff, art stuff, etc., etc. Also, you can send us a submission like we just read out on the show. You can send those to submissions@podtacular.com, or you can click on the big green button on our homepage that says submit. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That is facebook.com/podtacular and twitter.com/podtacular. Also, make sure you visit our YouTube page, which is youtube.com/podtactv, and we put video updates up there regularly whenever there's kind of some information that we can put in video form, like screenshots or doing analysis of videos that 343 releases. And we try to put stuff out on a fairly regular basis. once every week or maybe every 2 weeks, depending on kind of the flow of information. And once Halo 4 gets closer and closer, that information is definitely going to come out more and more. And juggling that time is going to be interesting for me. So we'll, hopefully I'll be able to keep you guys up to date here on the podcast and in the videos as well. Make sure you check out Monday Night's Matchmaking. It is every Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you want to get some good Halo Reach gameplay in before Halo 4 rolls around, or you just kind of want to get back into the swing of things with Halo, maybe you've kind of gotten away from Halo and you've done some other video games and you want to kind of get back in the groove before Halo 4 comes out, check us out. You can send a message to me. My gamer tag is PodDustStorm on Monday nights and just asking for an invite. We usually have a couple of slots open and it's an open party, so feel free to bring anybody you want. We usually start out with a big team battle, depending on the party size. Sometimes we'll do invasion or multi-team, team slayer, that kind of stuff. And then after 2 hours or so, we'll go into custom games.
Hopefully, I will be there.
Hopefully, Brent will be there.
Yes, I'm going to try my hardest next Monday. This coming Monday. Monday.
It's not going to be Monday Night Football, but it's going to be Monday Night Matchmaking.
Are you ready for some matchmaking? A Monday Night Party!
We are done for this episode. Thank you guys for taking the time to listen to us. And we will see you guys probably in a couple of days when the new bulletin comes out. So,
Hopefully there's going to be a deluge of good information coming out of that bulletin.
Exactly. But, if you have any questions of any of the information that we covered tonight or any of the information that will come out in the bulletin, then make sure you send it in to us so we can read it out on the show and answer your questions.
I love reading submissions.
Do you?
It's one of my favorite parts of the show, actually. And I'm not even being facetious. Like, for real.
Minus the grammar part.
Yeah. I need to get back. I used to go in and manually, like, fix the grammar on these.
Yeah, I'll start having you do that if you want to do it again.
Because sometimes, like, you start reading it, and it, like, the grammar just messes you up. Like, you can't read through it because it doesn't make any sense.
And we don't mean to make fun of everyone, but when it happens, we tend to make fun of you because, like, you send stuff in, you should be able to use grammar.
Well, it used to be worse back when.
Oh, yeah, it used to be a lot worse.
You know,
worse.
Just sitting there, like, laughing at every single misspelled word.
Yeah.
Now, if we see a misspelled word, it's kind of like.
We try to look
say,
over it.
Say the word that you think it is.
Unless it's misspelled in a really hilarious way, then we'll obviously point it out.
Oh, yeah, if it's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, it's real funny.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, guys, again for listening, and we will see you next time.
See you later, folks.